We go.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
All right, that's pretty good. That's the best one yet.
It's about fucking time someone else is.
I'll just have to tell them I'm not a thief. Just a pervert.
Pizza, pizza.
Bingo! Showtime!
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little thing Tech Show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that a Lincoln bat. For the strongman, go direct to DLNGS.org. MIRC channel is a Linux.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the cast is just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 894 of the Linux Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Pat.
Waiting for spring, baby.
Yeah, we have Joel.
From the Great White Midwest.
And Joe may be coming back, hopefully. You'll hear him in the pre-show if he doesn't.
In the frozen over Texas.
Yeah.
In the polar vortex.
I guess Punxsutawney Tom saw shadows. We got six more weeks or
they
something.
They shot him. Somebody hit him.
Somebody. Yeah. This well, year?
They're about ready to.
Took him out.
Again this year?
Every year.
Every year.
They shot him?
Some of my fondest memories are like going to like a farm in the summertime in Pennsylvania. My dad and the farmer letting us shoot all the groundhogs. And my dad would shoot like six of them. I would take out like three of them. Lots of fun. And then we'd give them to the farmer and he would feed it to his dogs.
I was going to say, that's about the only thing I'd want to feed a groundhog to.
What do they taste like?
I'm sure that's right. I would say I'm sure it'd be tough
it.
As fuck.
Dogs eat them.
Yeah. Well, that brings an interesting question. What's the weirdest meat you've ever had? I've had...
Squirrel?
Venison. Yeah, I haven't had squirrel, but I have had venison. I've had octopus. I've had...
Octopus is awesome. So squid.
Buffalo. Octopus is awesome.
Cuttlefish is
taco.
Good.
And squid is good too.
It's all in the same family.
Yep. I need to go down to there's an Asian grocery store, and I bet you I can probably go in there frozen
some,
foods.
Some cat? Are you Joel?
No, I want to go get some takoyaki. Is what I want. You ever had takoyaki?
No. What is that?
It's like a kind of like a fritter, but in the middle of it's a piece of octopus. And it's Japanese.
It.
It's a Japanese like kind of like street food, and they typically put on it mayonnaise. They call it bulldog sauce, but it kind of looks like a teriyaki. So they put both of those sauces on it, and then put bonito flakes on top of it.
That sounds good. That's right.
Yeah, it's excellent. I've had it fresh at a restaurant once. They're no longer around. It is a chain, like a smaller chain of restaurants that they were specializing Korean fried chicken. I'm trying to remember the name of it. I want to say Bibimbap, but that's not right because they're not here. But it was a Korean fried chicken was okay. But I saw takoyaki on the menu and I had to try it because I've seen them. If you look on YouTube, you can see them making it on the street in Japan. And it just looks... One, it looks fun to make, but the other is it is delicious.
I'm not a huge fan of tempura. I find the seasonings that they put in the batter very bland.
Yeah, tempura is bland. It's not. It's a more of a fried fish kind of thing. But I know Dan has had squid because I've seen him eat it at BD Mongolians.
I've had squid.
The best squid I ever had a squid, octopus and squid salad, like Greek style.
Ooh.
With like citrus.
That sounds so delicious, actually. Man. I like one of my favorite forms of squid. It's got to be calamari, you know, because, you know, my favorite when you go to a restaurant with calamari is if they actually do more than just the rings. They also have some tentacles in there, too.
Yeah. Pet peeve with calamari is... It's just got to be flour with just salt and pepper. None of this breadcrumbs bullshit.
Yep. Or either that or a very... I mean, if it's batter, it's a very thin batter, not very thick. And it has to be cooked just right because it could be a little bit rubbery. But... And then you can dip it in. You can either do marinara. I can either do marinara or aioli for a dip on that. But and then I've had. There's been kind of a couple places around. I've had it where it's like a lighter batter, and there's a place called Buca de Beppo here, and they have it. And theirs is a little bit darker batter, but it's got a little bit of a spice in the batter, and it's good. But that is good. And I haven't had that in a while. But I want to go the Asian grocery store. It's just like an exit away on 270 from me. They have just a phenomenal selection of stuff. Everything from you can go the frozen food section and get stuff you've never even seen before. I'm sure you can get some pretty weird stuff in there because, you can find where they have, the dried squid, that they eat for snacks, which that doesn't really appeal to me that much.
Well, one of the weirdest things from the Asian market that I've gotten, they have these little, I think they're Japanese, they're like little custard portions, in a little cup, and they're not refrigerated, they're like vacuum sealed, and they stay fresh.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about. I've seen those.
They're awesome. Good, too. Yeah, they're good, too.
They come in, different flavors. They'll come in, strawberry, raspberry, or just custard. And
they might even have a green tea one, too, I bet you, too. Because that's the green tea pokey is one of my favorite ones. But it's just interesting to walk around It says the actual name of the place is Cam International Food Market, but it's probably 90% Asian. Everything from Thai to Chinese and Japanese, and then the snack out they have a taco flavored chips and taco. I don't mean like Mexican tacos. I mean taco as in octopus flavored potato chips. Not potato chips either. They're actually I think they're like a rice kind of puff kind of thing, but they're pretty good. But it's just interesting to walk the aisles and see the different things that you see in there. And it's definitely different than your standard Kroger's, Meyer's, or Walmart's up here. And I know Dan goes to the Asian grocery stores every once in a while quite a bit.
Too. Yeah, this one a couple miles from my house that I go to. It's really good.
My favorite one was the one when I took I went to Phoenix twice for the company no longer exists, but there was a company called MUS or MUX, and they were kind of like a subcontractor for IBM's education department. So they would teach the AIX courses and stuff like that. This is we're talking early to mid 2000s. Right. Is when that happened. And I took my AIX certification that I had. I took there, but I took another, I think I took a storage class there as well. IBM storage class, which talked specifically about the storage types and stuff that they had on AIX boxes. But in there was a place called, I think it's called 99 Ranch, I think. And you walk in there and they have these big tanks in the seafood department with big old catfish swimming in the tanks. Big-ass catfish.
I don't know. The weirdest thing I've ever seen in an Asian market is you see it more in the Chinese places, like in Chinatowns. They have a 100-year-old egg. They basically take an egg that they did some kind of seasoning to, and then they bury it in dirt for months. And I had a friend of mine who was Chinese, and she was like, yeah, that stuff is the most fucking vile, disgusting shit you've ever eaten. My grandmother used to eat it.
Yeah, those don't really appeal to me.
I mean, it's some kind, you know, it's basically food preservation before they have refrigeration, you know?
Yep. Yeah, you know, it's like one thing I'll never try that I've seen them try in quite a few YouTube channels is surstring.
What was it?
Heard of that?
What is it?
Surstromming. Yeah, it's from it's a Scandinavian country. I want to say, where is it? I don't know if it's Swedish, but it's essentially it's fermented mackerel, I think, or something like that.
It's like supposed to be like that's like the fermented shark from Iceland.
Yeah. It's supposed to be like the worst smelling thing that you can open. In fact, when they actually open it,
durian fruit. You ever eat one of those?
I know. I don't supposedly, ever want to eat it.
It tastes like a custard with onions in it.
That's what I've heard. It's one of those things where I bet you the first bite would be vile. But maybe if you second one, it might not be as bad. I don't know. The people who actually eat it, even they will open it. Will open it under, like, they'll fill a bowl full of water, and they'll open it under the water so the smell isn't as bad. Because from my understanding, if you watch some of the YouTube videos on it, a lot of times if you just open it like a regular old can of food, that first time you pierce it, it's under so much pressure, the liquid starts to just squirt out of it. It's like, no.
Sounds nasty.
I wouldn't eat that.
Well, one thing I want to try is, you know cashews, the nuts? They grow off the ends of this fruit that supposedly is very popular in Asia. They make juices out of it, and I've never had it. I'm curious what it tastes like.
Interesting. Well, that's like, I want to get, for a little while, Starbucks actually had it, they had
Civet coffee.
No. They call it the drink that you would order was Cascara Cold Foam, and so what it was, some of the flavoring syrup was a syrup made from not the coffee bean itself, but the fruit that's around the bean. So they'll make a syrup out of that. And they use that. All I know is it tastes good. I can't really describe it.
That's subjective.
It's a different kind of a flavor. Yeah.
You know, it's like chutney. Any chutney I've ever tasted tastes like puke to me.
Yeah. It's not bad. It's real light. I don't want to say almost like a cherry, but not really, you know, because it's definitely not really like cherry at all. So it's just like when you ask
cherry course, like cough syrup, maybe.
Yeah, not that strong, but it's kind of like I used to have an English teacher. You'd ask him, he said he ate turtle in class, and we all asked him, well, what does turtle taste like? He's like, I can't tell you. It's like turtle to me.
You can get frog legs like to be in these place.
Frog legs are damn good. That's like I need to try that pho recipe that I found. I sent it to Dan for the Instant Pot.
Yeah, I saw that. It looked really good.
Yep, and it's convenient. It's probably flexible enough you can vary it too. I also found a recipe for making butter chicken at home. In the Instant Pot. But, and the problem with me trying new stuff in there is a lot of new stuff I'll try. In fact, I'll really like and eat. My wife won't. She's not that adventurous. So I made a carne asada, which if you don't know what carne asada is, it's essentially a Puerto Rican beef stew. And it's delicious. It has like a sazon and
and your wife wouldn't try it?
No, actually, I've made it quite a few times. She does like it. So.
Oh, okay. I was going to say carne
asada. It's a little bit, but she
sounds
she's
like
almost...
Mofongo.
Mofongo? Trying to think if I've had that. I might have. Or I'm trying
it's
to...
It's like a stew.
Maybe it was... no. What was it?
I mean,
oh,
it's,
no.
It's got... It is marinated, but you grill it. You can grill it. You can do it different ways.
Right. No, I know what I was thinking of. When you said mofongo, I don't know why I thought of this. Fried yuca?
Yeah, yuca's like a potato.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's delicious.
Sweet potato.
I love yuca.
Yeah, we were in... when I was in Maitland... one of the guys, he's actually in my department. He's in cloud assurance, but he works for the banner team. But he's a Puerto Rican native. And when we were there for a brief period of time, when I was still in professional services, he was on my team. And my boss at the time, he asked the locals, where's the good food? And this Puerto Rican guy told him about this place where we got food one day for lunch. And it was a mom-and-pop Puerto Rican food place that operated like out of an old gas station. And
Puerto
that was
Rican
some of the best
awesome,
food
man.
I've ever had. Oh, it is. It's
the
delicious.
Roast, the roast pork is phenomenal, Puerto Rican stuff.
Oh, yep. That and the carne asada were my two favorite things that I've tried there. They had a pollo con arroz, too, but that's kind of tame.
The best Puerto Rican dish is this dish called pastelas. They make it around Christmas time, and it's basically mashed up plantains with bits of meat and there's olives, there's raisins, there's chickpeas.
Works for me.
And it's really, really freaking good. What it is you mash it up, and it's like a puree. And then what you do is you put them in portions in either parchment paper or like banana leaves, and you fold them, and then you freeze them. And then what you do is when you prepare them, you cook them. You put them either in a pot of boiling water for a couple hours or in a pressure cooker for about 40 minutes. And it cooks it. And you put that on like some rice. Phenomenal. I've made it. It's really good. Very, very high in calories, you know, but phenomenal.
I do need to get some. I'd like to get some stuff to make some quima too.
Some what?
Quima.
Oh, yeah, quima.
I want to do it with lamb though, because that's probably what the Indians would actually do, since the cow is sacred.
But I've never eaten. Have you ever eaten goat in any style?
Yes, I've eaten goat frequently.
Not goat. Guys like it.
Not meat, but I've had goat cheese. Goat
smoked
cheese.
No, that doesn't count. No,
actual
meat.
The one thing that I've always had when I've had goat, it's always like, very bony. There's a lot of.
What does it taste like? What's the consistency? Is it porky or? Closer to lamb.
No, I would not lump. I wouldn't lump it like lamb. It doesn't have like I don't think it has like that. That lamb has that like lamb/gamey kind of flavor to it. I think goat's a little more subtle than that. Gosh, the only thing I picture in my head right now is like every time I've had goat. It's had a lot of bones with it. So there's like a lot of bones, right. And you have to eat the meat like kind of off the bones.
Right.
When I've had it in like a bunch of different kind of like curry styles with the Caribbean, the way that they make it, it's been delicious. But it's, oh crud, I'm trying to think of what
it would be somewhere between pork and lamb, like not the heavy flavor of lamb, but I think a little more of a unique flavor than a heavier flavor than pork typically has.
Right.
I try it.
And no, it's really good. I love it. It is really.
Now I don't know if they're still in downtown, but I remember when Passion of the Christ came out and Luke was still little. I think he was still in school, like in like preschool or something like that when that movie came out. So we both wanted to go see that movie. So we went. I think it took a half day or something, and we went and saw it downtown. And there was a place there in the down arena district called Ted's Montana Grill. It was Ted Turner's Montana Grill. And they had a buffalo burgers, like a hamburger made out of buffalo, and that was delicious.
I've had bison. It's good.
Yeah, I'll try any kind of meat like that, you know. Grind it up as long as it's cooked good, you know. I like
those
it.
Fucking
probably.
Ribs are crazy. Big fucking brontosaurus eye shit.
Oh, yeah, bison like ribs would be awesome. Yeah. But then I remember I had a beefsteak palomilla when I was in Miami. I think it was a Cuban style. It was just a steak. It was marinated in an onion, lime, and garlic, I think it was, and served up with like a side of black beans. Oh, freaking awesome. And fried plantain. I don't know if I was there and I had the fried plantains, or if I think I had the fried plantains when I went down. There was another Cuban place I went to that was in one of the open air malls down there where I had chicken and rice, and then the side was the fried plantains, which was delicious. Like I said, I can make some of this stuff, but it's like, will the family eat it? Luke will eat anything. All right. My wife, not so much. She's pretty white bread American kind of, you know, like it's like she'll get that green giant Brussels sprouts that are just drenched in butter, you know, out of the frozen food section, and she'll eat those. And I'm like, if I'm going to have Brussels sprouts, I want them fresh. I want them with a little bit of bacon grease.
You know? I like them roasted in the oven with like some olive oil and some seasonings on them.
Or that would also work too.
Cut them in half. You know?
Yeah, and I think the reason is they just taste better when they're fresh like that.
Just the way I like my asparagus.
Asparagus too, yeah.
Asparagus is fresh, better fresh too, yeah. Take that canned asparagus and throw it out. Yuck. Although, I would like to try pickled asparagus, because I bet you that's pretty good.
It's okay.
Or pickled green beans would also be good.
Yeah, they're okay.
Nope. I don't like anything that's been brined.
Dan loves his pickled eggs, the bread ones from Pennsylvania.
In the Red Hot Mamas,
he really
too, right?
Nasty farts.
I've had a pickled egg once when I was really young and I didn't like it, and I've been reluctant to try one ever since.
Right.
Is it pickled or red beet eggs? Which one are you talking
it's the same
about?
Thing.
Probably
it's
the red.
Yeah,
red pickled ones.
That's like an
Amishing German.
Yes.
You know, Pennsylvania German, you know?
Yep. You go to a bar and they'd have a big jar of them there.
Yeah.
Up in Pennsylvania. Yeah, absolutely. But I'd never have one of those. No, not out of a bar in a big jar. My wife
loves
those.
But we know you like the Red Hot Mamas, though.
Yeah, no, I do. I like those. Which I should probably, you know, I don't mind red beets now. I probably would like pickled eggs. My wife does. She loves it.
See, in that area of the country, when you look at something called pot pie, it's not the shape of a pie either. It's essentially chicken soup with big fat ass noodles in it.
Well, it depends on how you're doing chicken pot pie. You're right.
That's true.
That is one way to do it, or you can actually do it like a crust if you want to, but that's not the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Pennsylvania Dutch food, it's.
Oh, but yeah, when you're talking about.
I don't think if it's weird. Right. Yeah, I don't think it's. I don't really think it's that weird of food. But then I grew up with it too. So.
Now you know when I grew up. When I was younger, chicken and dumplings. I always associated that with like the Campbell's chicken and dumplings, where you get the like round like gnocchi style dumplings in the soup, and. Now, like
not
all
at
the recipes
all.
That I see out there, now that I know better, you know, I'm like, ooh, yeah, that's completely different.
And Scrapple.
Oh, Scrapple's I love.
I like it. Once in a while. It's not something I would eat all the time. It's in the same category as like blood pudding. You know, it's once in a while. It's really good.
But it's like cornbeef. Or cornmeal mush, but it's got, of course, meat in it, too.
And I love blood sausages. They're fucking awesome. You know, it's a very common food in all different cultures because, you know, they would slaughter an animal and nothing would go to waste. You know, it's not something I would eat all the time, but once in a blue moon, it's really good.
I do want to try haggis.
I've had it in Scotland, and it was good. You know, the shit that they sell in the can is disgusting. That's garbage. If you go, all they do is, it's basically oats with meat and stuff. And what they do is they use the stomach as like the vessel to cook it inside of it. They stuff it and then they stick it in the oven and roast it. And you don't eat the stomach part. You just cut it open and pull the stuff out and it tastes really good.
Sounds delicious.
Every time I've ever seen haggis, it looks like stuffing almost.
I'm not a big fan of liver, like things that have a strong liver flavor. So
I'm with you on that.
It's never been the flavor of liver that bothered me. It's sometimes it's the texture.
So that's kind of what turned me off on haggis. I've had it a couple of times, and I have a hard time getting past
it. It's got
the
that
liver.
Iron flavor. Livery to
flavor,
it.
Yes.
Have you ever had blood sausages, Dan?
I have not.
Go to like a Puerto Rican place might have it. Like the better variants are like the Spanish style variants. They usually do onions mixed in or rice mixed in with it, with seasonings.
Uh-huh.
You probably get it in like a Puerto Rican place, and you fry it up in a pan and you cook it with some like eggs. It's fucking delicious.
I'm gonna have to try that. I'm gonna have to see if I can track it down.
Now, one thing I will never understand, like if you ever watch, there's a YouTube channel called Anglophenia, where they really shows you like all different weird things about Britain. Like one of them talks about why in their bathrooms, instead of, you know, typical lights like we have in our bathrooms, like there's bathrooms always have a light hanging in the middle with the string, because, you know, your hands can be wet, you know. Things like that, but they also had a bit that talks about different foods, and they had one video on the full English breakfast, which is you have some
chipotle sausage. The beans from the can. The rest of it's good.
I was gonna say the thing I don't understand about that is the weak ass Heinz baked beans on toast. It's like,
yeah, that's disgusting.
Why?
The rest of it's good. Like, you know, they call it bacon, but it's really just a slab of ham. Canadian bacon.
Yeah.
It's ham.
Yeah. And the tomatoes, too. That sounds fine.
Grilled tomato.
You know? Yeah. And the black pudding. I might try that. That would be good.
Yeah, it's good.
But beans, I mean, I like baked beans. I like toast. I just don't think of slapping a layer of baked beans on a piece of toast. No. It's like, I'd rather have butter on it, okay? or some apple butter, which Apple butter, that's not really Pennsylvania Dutch, but it's still good, though. But tech. Some of the things I'm going to start looking for is Z-Wave, anything that will work on Z-Wave, because my new house will have that.
Is that,
people still use Z-Wave?
I was going to say, is that a standard? Is that a, still an active standard?
I think it is. My thermostat will be a Honeywell thermostat that supports Z-Wave. I believe everything in the house will have, like, it has that, has one switch that will be a smart switch. I think that goes in the great room, because the great room will have can lights in it, I think, as well. I think, now I'm thinking about it, when I go look at the blueprint that I got from the electrician, this may be the first time I've had in years, not counting this apartment, they actually had lights in the ceiling, which used to be very common when I was growing up. Well, you know, each room had a light in it.
Oh, the recessed lighting?
My house, yeah, my house will have some of that in places. So it might be even in my office, which I'd be fine with. You know, I'd still need a lamp or two, but it's like, I like the idea of the lights in the ceiling, because they take up less space up there. you know, independent lights.
My
over
house
the,
has them all over the place, those high hats.
Yep. And there's going to be two pendant lights that go over the island in my kitchen. But I'm going to start to look for some of the other stuff, too. There's one panel that will be probably up by the front door that has that can control both the thermostat as well as any of the smart features in the house. Plus, they're going to give me another Echo Dot. Like, I need another one of those. But they're going to throw in one of those when we close as well. But the panel itself is a Qlosis. I forget the actual version number, but it's basically an LCD panel, kind of like a tablet, that'll be in the wall. And like I said, you can control the thermostat as well as the lock. Because on the front door, there'll be I'm trying to remember the name of the lock company, but Quickset 888 smart lock, which is, I don't mind that as long as I can disable the smart locking features. And then the door will have not a ring, but it'll have a different kind of a door camera on it. the panel, the control panel, has actually got a service attached to it called alarm.com, so it'll have app too for that, for the whole house. And it does have some geofencing, so I can set it up so that if I get within certain distance of my home, that, like, certain things will happen, like the lights will turn on and stuff like that, you know. None of it is open source that I know of. Now, the protocol might be somewhat open. And I know I've talked about it before, but I'm actually going to start looking for some of the stuff so that when that comes, I'll be ready for it. And certain things I want to start also looking for, too, are window coverings, because I'll need to buy all new window coverings, because there's not going to be any in the house, so I need to put some up. Actually, one of the things I think I'm looking for is I want to look for possibly some blinds that they either have remote control or are motorized. They don't have to be smart ones. I don't care if they're smart, but... Yeah, I do think, by the looks of it, when I was there the other day, I think
are you going to use did you look at Home Assistant? Is that the one?
No, that's the open source thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Does that support Z-Wave? Z-Wave devices?
Good question. I don't know.
Uh.
I haven't really done a lot of researching. I'm just starting it. Z-Wave is a international standard and works on 800 to 900 megahertz radio frequency.
It does say Z-Wave on their website.
I'm going to my builder's smart home section.
Z-Wave JS driver.
Yeah, yeah. QOLSYSQ panel. That's the actual panel that's in there. And it has the alarm.com app, so I can load that on my different devices. Honeywell T6 Pro Z-Wave Thermostat Echo Dot. QuickSet Smart Code 888 door lock. Skybell is the name of the doorbell / camera thing. And the smart switch is the Eaton Z-Wave smart switch. So I want to see if they ever actually have any light bulbs, or, and they don't have that. How I know it wouldn't be difficult to put more smart switches in. I just need to find which ones they are and buy more. And I can probably do the installation of those on my own, because it's not that hard to do a light switch. And I'll definitely do that if there's more can lights than I initially thought, then I'll definitely be putting more of those in there, because I'll just put that on the switch to turn them on and off. But it's amazing how I even got my wife, like, I can't get my wife to look at the Roku, specifically the MB app on that that's back to my MB server that's running on my Pi. Couldn't ever get her to use that. But the smart home stuff with the light, I don't know. I don't know. She'll use like Netflix and the Fubo TV app just fine, but like to get her to look at our own movies that we paid good money for, couldn't care less. I use it more than she does. Like one weekend over the weekend, I binged all the Star Trek 3 through 6, and because I have all the Blu-rays of those ripped and sitting on a hard drive. But
when he says ripped, he means torrented.
No, I mean ripped, because I have the Blu-rays packed in storage right now.
Mm-hmm. I don't in storage.
Yes, they are in storage.
In someone else's house.
I
could go get
them if I wanted to. Nope, in my storage facility.
You're just holding somebody else's backup for them.
Nope, it's mine. We pay $115 a month for the rent for that place for now. But
until 2025.
No. May, right?
2026.
Yeah. We're gonna have I look like Pex Plumbing will be in the new house.
Pex?
Yes.
What's that?
It's essentially plumbing technology that you can pull like you can network cables.
Oh.
So, and it's like a.
Did you say PEX or Flex?
PEX, P E X.
Hmm.
Okay. Which I know the early runs of it, they had a bad run with them and they were bursting and stuff, but I think it's pretty reliable now. And the nice thing is, it's kind of all home run. So like it'll be kind of a little bit like the flex gas lines I had in my old house. It'll be kind of like that. So where they all run to one place, so it'll be easy to add on to it if we needed to. So, but it looks like that's what it is. And I think what it looks like to me, since a lot of my plumbing is in a slab, it looks like to me like they put like some Schedule 40 in that, and then they put the the PEX piping in that, I think. And it's what it looks like to me. I can't really tell because not everything's done yet. But in fact, they're still doing framing. So, and I'm hoping that I go down there this weekend and the roof is on. We'll see. But I was talking with somebody. I said, you know, it's probably not a good idea for them to do any work. Even if they got framing all completed, they probably couldn't go any further until we had windows and a door installed. Because if they put like the copper wiring in there and they left it unsecured, it would be gone the next night. I guarantee you that. Freaking scrappers would come in and do it.
Darn meth heads.
Yep. Among others. Yeah, I had to do file maintenance for a client last night. That was long. Well, not long. But it's just annoying. Because the other thing is I've been doing, since we got some new people, I've been training them up at the same time. So I had to do that maintenance. Normally I would have just done it, you know, without being on a call, but I had a Zoom session and a recording going, so I had to kind of tell people what I was doing while I was doing it, and it just made me slower. And then you find out, like, everyone, I guarantee you, everyone it works in IT has probably had an experience like this where you get told to fix something and you go in to try to find a documentation and it's either...
What documentation?
Exactly.
Or it has documentation, but the documentation is ancient, never been updated, and yep. It's so interconnected that you can't find anything.
Or like in my case, where if you look at the official documentation that came from the company and how to set it up, as in my company, all right, the one I actually work for, and you ping the DBA and say, hey, I need to create this account over on the server, and they're like, we haven't done that for over a year. I'm like, well, how do you do it? Well, we have this that we do, yeah. That we schedule. And I'm like, oh, well, okay, can do it, all right? I'll give you a task. Do it.
It comes time for dev team to hand over an application to support. And they're like, we have this really, really good documentation for you guys to look at and take on this application that we haven't KT'd you for. But the wiki has everything you'll ever need. And then they don't give you permissions on the wiki.
I've had
that too. When you finally get permissions on the wiki, and then when you finally get permissions on the wiki, you know, after you've supposedly taken over because they've given you everything that you need, there's nothing there. It's like a page and a half of garbage.
Yep.
I'm not bitter.
Well, and I don't know why we do this to ourselves, because I try not to. When I write documentation, I try to have, like, at least... If it's got to be on a Confluence site or something like that, I'll have it somewhere else too, just because, you know. But there's just certain times where you run into a coworker or something and you're like, why did you do it this way? You can do it this way so much easier.
Because it's why? Not documented.
Right. Or... My favorite is, well, we've always done it this way. That needs to stop. I don't care if you've always done it this way. That's the wrong way. We're going to do it this way. And then when I show them, they're like, oh, that was so much easier. I'm like, right? Hello? And here's the documentation. It's right here. And they're like, this is so awesome. I'm like, now you know what it's like when you get good documentation, right? So now when you go to document something else, can you at least do it to that level, please? Thank you.
Nope.
Yeah, never happens.
But. Well, and another one that I've come across recently is I'll have been given a wiki, all the documentation and everything, and I'll see that it's older and it hasn't been updated, and I'll start working my way through and trying to get it updated, and then I'll find out that the reason it hasn't been updated is because there's another one.
Or the developer isn't with the company anymore.
Well, that's happened. But yeah, the recent is, you know, I was looking at this documentation that they gave me, and it's very, very out of date. And then I start asking questions and searching around, and there's another one that exists that's more updated, but still out of date.
Yep. Now, one thing, good thing that's been happening is our company had several seats in. It's actually from the same people who do the Linux Academy, in a Cloud Guru. So it's a bunch of different training videos, and they have practice tests for the different AWS certifications. So the one I'm working on is probably the easier one. I'm going to continue taking them as long as they let me. The one I'm working on is AWS certified cloud practitioner, right? And I'm going through and taking the test, and it's like, and the thing that kind of annoys me, because every technology company at some point does stuff like this, where they'll take something that's kind of common, somewhat standard, and then make their own standard on top of that. And AWS is certainly that way in a lot of respects. It has a lot of the same things that you're already used to, but then, you know, you read through it, like in the test, it'll say, what AWS service does this? And you're like, okay, maybe it's AWS Shield, I don't know. But I'm to the point now where I'm just taking the practice test. I am kind of watching the videos, but I'm probably going to be ready to pass the test before I watch all the classes, my guess. Because right now I'm getting 70s. I don't know what the passing is on it. I have to look. But the other things I noticed too, is, and not that they're be of any use to me, but a Cloud Guru also has stuff in there for Azure as well as Google as well.
Yeah, well, so, our big thing right now is this year we're supposed to be switching to ServiceNow.
Whoa! I'm sorry.
Yeah, me too.
So sorry. I'm very sorry.
Tell them no.
It's the bane of my existence, man.
Well, they're starting the process by getting rid of PARS, which is one of our release tools, in favor of its upstream, which is Remedy. And they are going to get some massive pushback come the middle of next month when it actually happens from basically every development team. The rollback will get rolled back.
It kind of reminds me of how we now our main monitoring tool for monitoring our instances, and we also use Synthetics with it, is Datadog. And we just re-switched to that. But in the past, we've had SolarWinds and Logic Monitor. Now, Logic Monitor's pretty much gone, okay? But, like, the other day, it's like all of a sudden we get an alert and it came from SolarWinds, and we're like, I thought that was disabled. I guess it wasn't. And to note, it is not one of the services that was affected by the big SolarWinds data breach. It was something else. I don't remember what was, but the monitoring is fun. And then my other favorite too is there is a function called the screen is called UIBM, and it is one of the ways that that our clients can actually communicate to their users. All right. So we had a round of OS patching not that long ago, and our client decided they're going to put a message that runs just from now until when the OS patching's done, that OS patching was going to happen. And of course, guess what?
The OS patching didn't happen?
No, the OS patching did happen, but the message that comes up broke the synthetic monitor. Because a synthetic monitor is essentially, now you can codify it, so you can modify it. You might be able to put a way that you can have it ignore that screen or just click the OK button if you see it. Really, what needs to happen is we need to write some if-then stuff into the synthetic. So, like you can say, if this comes up, click this button, all right? And then move on with life. But no, I don't know if we're gonna do that. Mike, one more, because I said we're gonna have to account for this in our in the synthetics, and they're like, there ain't that many clients who use it. I'm willing to take the risk. I'm like, no, I don't want to be paged on shit that's not actually down. You don't get paged. I do. Actually, I don't anymore, but. Unless it's from one of the underlings.
Yeah, well, I expect my weekend will be much similar to my entire week so far.
Complete shit.
Yeah. Hopefully the power stuff is resolved by Saturday and Sunday. If it's not, then I'll be working.
Updated snowcast, 2 to 3 inches.
I hope it's done snowing in Texas.
Isn't tomorrow like the last day?
Probably.
Hopefully.
Maybe I'll just get drunk and stay asleep until it's 60 degrees again.
This is a hibernation, huh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Don't think my wife would appreciate that, though.
She got it covered, right? She'd take care of the house while you're hibernating.
Probably beat me with a bat while I was passed out.
She whip you, beat you, take away your charge card?
Sure.
Yep.
Tell you what, though, I'm loving this Google Pixel 4a.
Nice phone, ain't it?
You know, it's nice having a phone that's not like 3-4 years old.
That's not 5 years old.
Yeah, it's nice having a newer. It's having that, you know. Although I really honestly forgot how much of a pain in the ass it is to. When you have to do like a security update or an update on a Google phone.
And you're going to get them every month for a little bit.
Yeah, I'm grateful for them, but every time like you do an update, it's got to go through, it restarts and then it goes through and updates all the applications. Like it checks them and updates them.
You see,
them.
And at one point I thought that was supposed to stop.
Well, I had that happen. Like, I saw a notification. I was like, oh, there's a security update. You know, when you're ready, restart. And I did that, and then it came up, and then it said, it was applying the updates, and it was listing off all the applications that I had installed on the phone. And I'm like, man, I think I had a Pixel a really long time ago, or one of Google's phones. I forget what it was. It's over here somewhere. Like, one of the first ones. And that would do the same thing. Now, all the other phones that I had that weren't like Google phones wouldn't do that. Or running, I don't know if it was a certain OS that I was running, but a version of Android I was running, but like the Moto I had, it would just update. and then you come back, and I never saw it, like, going through each one of the individual applications, and I'm making sure everything was up to date, or something, like, whatever it does. But yeah, no, it is.
One of the things I do miss, and I don't think I want to install an application to get it, is the ability to shake the flash, to shake the light on. I really like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't, like I said, I don't know if I want to install an application to get that. I kind of feel like, I don't know why I'm so nervous about always installing applications. Like, what's spying on me now, huh?
Everything.
Yeah, so I'm like, do I really need to shake it on? Not really, but it's nice to have. I got so used shake to it doing
it. It's like, I think mine had the thing where you could squeeze it and lock it, or I forget. My old Pixel 2.
What happens when you squeeze it?
Yeah, mine had a feature in it where you could squeeze the phone and it would do things.
Like, physically squeeze it? How would know it was squeezing? Yep. That's weird.
Yep. Squeeze it.
Crush it like a beer can.
That's what I like to do on my phone. Just throw it on the ground and stomp on it.
Yeah.
That counts as gesture control, right?
Pixel 2 squeeze, yeah. Otherwise known as Active Edge.
So what is that only on the Pixel 2? It's not, they didn't carry that forward?
I think it was only on the Pixel 2. I think they got rid of it in future versions of the Pixel.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I. So did you? What is that? What is that thing that the man, I just read about it a few times. I haven't looked into it too much. Where they're adding something to Chrome OS that allows you to like access your phone through Chrome OS or Chromebooks. What is that called?
I don't know. I don't have a Chromebook.
I don't remember, but there is a way you can do that with Windows for.
But you should be able to install the Android app that.
Right. I run Android apps right on Chrome.
There's a couple of Android apps that'll let you screen mirror.
Right.
Oh, man, what is this? No, it's not. It's in the new versions. What's that?
Well, the Android app is, there's an Android app that allows you to mirror your screen onto like a Linux system. I use Screen Copy and I use Visor.
Okay.
But I don't know. Visor is the Android app one. Screen Copy is strictly a Linux install.
Interesting.
It's not mirror, pardon, and it's not linking. It's something else that they're adding to Chrome OS.
Like a context. I will admit that, you know, like if it was in the office or something, what I would do is I'd set up the integration with my phone, with the work PC. That way I don't have to look, like I could just keep looking at the PC. But, you know, it's so easy for me to just pick up my phone when I'm working from home. I just pick up my phone. It's like,
yeah, I got.
Really, it's not that hard to work either. But, you know, if I actually had to go to an office, but.
I got a phone mount that comes off of my second screen. Or the table for my second screen that'll hold my phone like right in the right position so I can type on it while I'm working.
Yep.
Oh, to mirror your Android device to a Chromebook.
Yeah, and for net and for now, all my desks I actually have my
Reflector 3.
Logitech K something, I forget which keyboard it is, a Bluetooth keyboard. It's designed specifically. You can do up to 3 different devices, which is the switch. You just flip the switch when you want to go from one to the other. I just got it sitting under my I found a stand that was relatively cheap for my iPad, and that's where I have my iPad sitting. So if I need to take notes or something, I'll just open the iPad and fire up the keyboard, and that's the easiest way to do that without having to type on the screen.
Okay.
Or anything else.
Here's an article from February 9th of this year. Chrome OS may soon be able to mirror your Google Pixel phone screen.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, it's Android Phone Hub. I found it and I was waiting to get a break-in to say that Android Phone Hub.
When Joel's talking, you gotta pound it in there.
Shut up.
Ram it in there. Anyway. Like a butt plug.
Butt plug.
Yeah, happy Valentine's Day, by the way.
It was last week.
May you and your butt plug have had a happy Valentine's Day.
But yeah, so
for yourself.
Android, yeah, Joel didn't have a good butt plug holiday, apparently. So it's got task continuation, notification mirroring, and find my device.
Well, the Find My Device, which iPhones have had for a long while, will be nice is if, like, you can open up your, like, you know, open up the app on your phone on your computer, your Chromebook screen, and be able to copy and paste into other things from your phone. But I don't know if that happens.
Like the promise that, you know, AirDroid gave you, and then they put all the worthwhile things behind a paywall. When they worked.
AirDroid. I used to use it anymore. I used to use it too.
There's no point in using it unless you pay for it, though.
Right.
How much is it? Is it a subscription cost or is it one time?
Who cares?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
If it's not free, Joe doesn't want it.
Oh, no. I don't have a problem with paying for things. I have a problem... With starting out, you know, it's free here. Use it. We're gonna put all the good stuff behind a paywall, and if you want to keep using it, guess what?
Yeah, no, that's how, like, it gets happened, you. Give you a taste for free, then take it away.
I will say that's happened with the email that I just got from LastPass, where now they're gonna start limiting the amount of devices that you can use with LastPass.
Yeah, I saw that. So, one device type, that's what it was.
Right, a device type. Like, for example, if you choose to put it on your mobile, which is probably what I want to do, then I can use it on everything. So, like, at least I can still use it on the iPad. And I guess that's okay, but it's like... You know, I didn't really use it that much to autofill stuff in on the web browser, but. But it was all, I mean, it was paid before, then it became pretty much, for the most part, free, and for most, like, if you didn't need something like, because LastPass, you can go all the way, like, you can have, like, a shared account with an enterprise account, so that, you know, you have all the passwords to all, like, if you had, like, well, in our case, we'd have all of our clients' systems' passwords in one centralized location that's secured, that we have to have multi-factor to get to and stuff like that. You know, or
it's a
the base one,
plus,
which is
plus
good enough for you.
It's a Notepad document hanging out on a Google Drive.
Yeah.
or a Dropbox.
Is that what yours is?
I use PW Save.
Or in, as I say, in our case, we were using key passes with a we had a key that we all had, you know, like a common key, so you didn't have to have a password to open a key pass. All right. So they migrated from that to AWS Secrets Manager, then the AWS. All right. But then I just find out they're going to migrate from that to something else already. It's like, pick one and keep one. What's wrong with the key passes sitting? Actually, I wanted to be honest. I'm still using the key passes sitting in the box folders because they work. Because one of the things we discovered is when they might, because apparently you can migrate a key pass to AWS Secrets Manager. Well, KeePass allows you to, like, and we have several things that are like this where we have like a key store password. Well, there's no username for a key store password. It's just the password, you know?
Right.
So in this KeePass, there's no username in the username field because we didn't need one. Okay. So then when we go in to look at it, they say, okay, everything's in Secrets Manager. You switch to Secrets Manager. Okay, go looking for that key store password. It ain't there because it didn't have a username in the field. It's like, come on, man. And in Secrets Manager, you must have usernames in your Secrets Manager. It's like, so now they're going to migrate that broken stuff over into this new thing, something called Vault. I've never heard of it before.
Oh, so it's like, HashiCorp Vault. I use it all the time.
Oh, HashiCorp Vault. Okay.
Yep.
Hopefully it's good.
No, it is really good. It is really good.
Okay. All right.
It's what I like about it is they have you can go to the web interface. You can use the command line.
Well, big reason, yeah,
you,
big reason.
There's like plugins for like every language that makes it really easy to use.
And that's kind of probably why they're going away from Secrets Manager to that, because one of their goals is they wanted to help use it so that we help automate some of the things that we do, you know.
Yeah.
Well, that's like now. When do you automate things? Like, for example, I did this file maintenance on two different files, and as I'm thinking about it, I don't know of a way you can actually automate it.
Wow, what do you mean by file maintenance?
Well, basically, Unidata.
Anything
which,
that's repeatable.
Right.
Seriously.
I'm with you on anything that's repeatable, but that's the problem is anything that's repeatable. Now, we have this script. Basically, what happened is we have a script that's run every night via cron that does a weekly Unidata file maintenance or file check. Okay, and we actually run it every day. You don't have to run it once a week, technically. But so one of its jobs is basically it builds a paragraph that we can run that resizes the Unidata files, which are essentially, they're old school PIC stuff. You know, so it's a flat databases, you know, no relational anything in it. Okay. One of the other jobs of that thing is it tells you if a file is damaged, right? So maybe a tiny bit of corruption in the file or something like that you need to remove, or the file will become unreadable at some point. Okay, so I had two files that were two smaller files, like one had like 200,000 records, and the other had like 600 records. Okay, so I had to fix them. So a couple ways you can go about it. There is a utility with Unidata that can fix a file based on what another tool called Guide will tell you. Basically, you run Guide against a file to look at a file, not all the files, but a file. And it'll tell you things like whether are too many groups in overflow. So you might need to change the block size and modulo of the file. You know, really old school shit. Okay. So, but with a damaged file, I got a couple ways. You can use that fix file, or like I did it last night, which I think is the safer one, is you back the file up, you do counts on the existing file, make sure you know what the counts are, and then you create a new file with the same block size and modulo as the old file, then you copy everything in the old file into the new file. So it's a little bit safer. And then on the one file I did, just so happened that the client was really good when they came into transition and into assurance. They actually had some of this stuff documented. So I went back to their documentation, looked at it, and they actually had a thing in there to compare the files to make sure. Because usually what happens is those corrupt records are pretty much gone. You can't recover them, right? So one of the things we do is we want to see, well, how many you're going to lose, right? In that case, there's roughly, looked like there was 200 records that were gone. So, but the client noticed, and this is something they just documented really well, they ran a couple different queries that could basically took all the records in each file, put them in a save list, and you do a diff on them, and you see if you know what's the difference, you know, what files are missing. And if you in the way you ran it is if it came up zero, the records that were missing in the were duplicate records, and you don't have to worry about it. You just move on with your life. Okay. So that file, that, you know, we went through that and it went through just fine. Then I deleted the basically then at that point you take the new file, copy it over the old file, and then you delete the new file's voc pointer. And that's it. The file's fixed. And we kind of did something similar with the other one, except we only lost one record, and the other file was user preferences. And so basically one user's preferences got waxed for some reason. So no big deal. The next time they log in, they'll be fine. They can build those preferences back up. All right. But in both cases, you had to be kind of agile, because if something happened, you had to make a decision. And it's one of those things where I don't know that automation can make that decision.
Yeah. Then you automate the alerts.
Yeah, that's all you can do. And we have those automated, so. But so that was an e-change that we did last night. It worked
automate,
fine. You know?
You automate the alerts, you write up a proper wiki, and you hand it off to your L1 team so you never have to look at it again.
And that's kind of why I had some of them on the phone again with me last night, so I can train those suckers how to do it. Because you do want to do this on a quiet system. You don't want users in the system. Even though that these two files are pretty much – there's certain files that I'm comfortable enough doing that kind of stuff during the day if it was an absolute emergency, not, you know, only in an emergency, you know, like there's other files, like we have some temp files, we call them www files. Basically they're just temp files. I've cleared them during the day when users on the system. Are you supposed to do that? No, but I've never had a problem doing it. So, you know, because they're temp files, I don't care. You know, the data that's in them, we don't need. You know, it's rebuilt up when people log in the system. So, and that's kind of the conundrum we get in with that. Plus, then we find out we have like kind of multiple versions of our product. We have the on-prem and hosted copy are pretty much the same thing. So we have the same kind of setup as a non-prem client would have, but just on our AWS systems. And then we have SaaS, which are SaaS products. Everything is highly automated over there. And then we come to find out, we have a system admin tool called SAVLA. It's just an internal, you know, our name for the product. Okay. We find out, oh, they have a version that does stuff at the command line. And we're like, oh, please, please, please. Because we would love to write a script that would automate our clone, you know? You know, so basically I just hit a button and it would just do it. All right, well.
All right, guys.
Come to find out, that one, we got to go? Okay.
Yeah, it's like I've been working since early this morning and I got to eat something before I go to bed.
All right, good night, Joe.
Talk to you guys later.
I hope you stay warm. So,
I will.
Have a good night, Joe.
Good night.
So I'll pick this back up. Couldn't have find out. Well, we can't use that command line version because our SaaS tools are written to use. I think they're using started out with Linux app servers with RDS database for the back end. And now they're migrating over to Aurora, which is basically it could either Aurora DB on AWS can host either Postgres or MySQL, and they're going the Postgres route. So And because it'll only work with that, and it won't work with straight up Unity, and it won't work with SQL, it's kind of useless to us. We can't use it. And we're like, oh, man. Because that's one of the big focuses. They want us to automate our clone production to test. So, but I'm having a blast learning about AWS, learning about EC2 and ElastiCache and the Elastic Beanstalk and all that stuff. Eventually, maybe I'm going to actually know how to use some of it better. I use it every day. Like, the thing I use the most common is the S3 buckets. So that's like a pre-built OWR file for one other project is for some reason in whenever, even if it happened in the last 3 years, I don't care. But some brainiac decided, well, we're going to use IP addresses instead of host names and fully qualified domain names. And I'm like, why? You know, and let me tell you why that's a bad thing when you're dealing with cloud stuff. Say, in the unlikely event US East in AWS goes down and you have to bring up your instances on US West, the IP addresses in Route 53 are all going to be different when you're back up on US West. And when you do that kind of a fallover with all the right tools, it updates Route 53 for you. If you're unfamiliar with Route 53, Route 53 is AWS's DNS service. And you have to actually, the other thing too is you will have to delegate your DNS to Amazon. So, but if you have IP addresses in your application's configurations, what happens when you go from US West, US East to US West, or US West to US East? Your application will break. Use freaking FQDNs, please. Fully qualified domain names. That should be admin 101, but apparently somebody decided it wasn't. So that's why I spent a good chunk of this week doing was auditing those systems and making sure that we were putting together plans to migrate them all over to using fully qualified domain names so that we're better fault tolerant wise. Like I said, though, it's in the unlikely event that one of those AWS regions go down. It's pretty unlikely for that to happen. So... I'm sure Google has something similar to that in their stuff.
What, regions?
Yeah, like availability zones and regions.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we use regions. We primarily, there's three regions we use, East, Central, and West. Right?
Mm-hmm. Amazon's got more, but most of the ones we use are US West and US East.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's like multiple data centers in each region, and there's more than just those regions that I said, but I
yeah, like, of course, we use, yeah.
Yeah.
But, yep.
Okay.
We got to start changing some of our backup scripts. Right now, we're just dumping it right in the S3 bucket. And the problem with doing it that way is you can't apply like an S3 bucket rule so far as how long does something sit in the S3 bucket, all right, before it moves it to Glacier, all right? A Glacier is the AWS long-term storage. And it's far cheaper disk. It's also not as easy to get stuff from. I forget. That's some of the stuff I'm learning. Anyway, so apparently you can't apply the rule to the bucket itself, but you can to the folders underneath of it. So we got to change some of our backup scripts so that we can better maintain those buckets. In S3 buckets, well, you'll say they can – they hold files, but essentially they don't hold files, they hold objects, which files are objects. So they can hold more than that. Pat, you can actually set up a website that runs off of an S3 bucket. Don't know why you'd want to, but you could. So, but I'm loving learning about the EWS stuff I use every day. I'm starting to understand some of those things a lot better, which is a good thing. So I'm going to get the cloud practitioner first, and I want to do the systems architect as well.
That's that'd be cool.
Yep.
Now, do you have to pay for that yourself, or will your company pay for that?
That's a good question. I might. Well, the tests aren't that expensive. So I'll probably just pay for them. But the training they were paying for, the website is a Cloud Guru, is the training website, and video, a bunch of video courses and practice exams and stuff like that. And it's by the same folks who brought you a the Linux Academy.
Yeah.
Let me see how much that costs. I think they will reimburse for it, but
whoa. You gotta start wrapping this up.
Yep. Let me see. I clicked the scheduled exam. Let's see. I wonder if I'll have to look that up. I'll see. Last I checked, it was probably less than $30, if I remember right, to take the exam. But I might be wrong. But if it's more, I'll see. But generally, it hasn't been a problem. I think most people are either getting reimbursed or not having to pay much for it. So, have a good evening, all.
All right, yeah. So, thank you. And here is your promos. Have a safe week. Fire it up. Stay indeed. Warm.
Oh, my God.
It's Hacker
Public Radio.
Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hello, my name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called LibreQuest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over. Oh, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was playing sushi.
$100
$100 for what?
That's for the cloud practitioner exam. The other ones are $150.
Okay.
It's worth it for me to pay for it, and even if I had to pay it for it up front, I don't really care.
Do you have to go and take those at like the Sylvan Learning Center or wherever it is?
I think you can take them online. I'll have to
from
look,
your house?
I think so.
How do they prevent you from cheating?
Good question. That's a good question. I don't know. I'll find out. I need to find out soon because I'm almost ready to take it. I need to. I'm getting just sitting and retaking the test a couple times. It's been my scores have been going up. because it's not like the question pool is that huge for the cloud practitioner one. It's bigger for the other ones.
Yeah, I said, I wonder, like, I guess they can have you, like, do take the test and have a proctor there monitoring you on, like, a Zoom call type thing where they have you, they're watching you on camera or something. But even that, mm-hmm. You can still have another device over there. And if you could just, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. What do I know?
Yep, I don't know. I guess I'll find out. But but yeah, like the bio practitioner is like the first one, and that's 100, and the rest of them are like 150 each. So, and they have several, but I'm not a giant fan of them, but they kind of said we have to work on getting one, so it's like, you know, might as well do it.
Well, Murph says the proctor watches, but again, I gotta wonder, like,
right.
What if you had another device, like, right next, like, and you could just, like, you have, like, your keyboards really close together, or it's just a whole other, complete other device, or you move your hand over, or, I guess they could watch your eyes where they go.
I don't have to take the Azure one, so I don't have to worry about that, Murph. So Murph, you have to get the Azure certification. I'm sorry. Actually, they're not really to be sorry about because Azure runs Linux too, so I mean it's not that bad. Let me make you swing the camera around and look around the room. Yeah. If anything, I am learning more by studying for it, you know, but yeah, and that's going to be the case here too. Now, I don't know if now I'm thinking I have to double check with the boss and say, hey, can I just use my corporate card to pay for this? So, I guess that's always an option because we all have a corporate card. No, it's not like we're using them for our travel budget is like easily a quarter of what it usually is this year because of the COVID.
Yeah. All right. Say goodnight, Joe. I gotta stop the recording.
Good night. Texas is not made to be cold.
It's not. I'm not made to be cold. This is why I live in Texas.
And more windmills is gonna help, but if you don't insulate them, it's not gonna help.
So Joe,
yeah,
you had the week off last week. Is this the revenge?
This must be the revenge.
The vacation.
If I had taken this week off, they'd have just called me in because of how bad all the power has been and everything.
How's your garage doing? That's where you're at right now, right?
No, I'm not in my garage.
Oh, I thought you moved your office to your garage or whatever it was.
Nope. You know what it is out in my garage?
Two.
Cold.
I bet.
Plus, I keep having to unplug everything because my washroom is right next to my garage. So the pipe burst, and guess what happened?
Flooded your garage, and now you have ice?
Flooded my garage. Well, I didn't have ice in the garage, but all my lovely electronics are out in the garage. So
and drenched.
Well, they didn't get drenched, but the water was kind of piling up on under some of the power supplies. So yeah, everything got unplugged.
It's gonna get above freezing here Sunday, I hope. It's and hopefully melt this week. Crap. Yeah. Yes.
It was 60 here yesterday.
It went from 30 to 60.
I don't say this very often, Dan, but fuck you.
No, but I'm saying it, that's what it did. Like, it went from 30 to 60, and now it's back down to like 30 20. Again.
Well, we went down to like negative 6 or negative 8.
That's not fun.
No.
No.
No, I wasn't trying to say, hey, we got it warm over here or anything, or we have it cold or whatever.
Dad,
I'm just saying.
My dad actually called me and just to say, hey, I hear it's cold in Texas. It's kind of nice in Florida right now.
Nice.
Who, Rich?
Nice of him.
No, my dad.
Oh, well. I just see it was like 2 last night here in Ohio. And let's see. I've been kind of religiously keeping ever since we had the pipe burst. Every night before I go to bed, I go make sure I at least got 2 faucets dripping, because I'm not having that again. I mean, it didn't. Nothing got ruined in the apartment, but it's just like it's just a pain, you know. And a fucking moron to put the hot water tank on the fucking patio.
That is pretty stupid. That is pretty stupid.
In Ohio! I'm in Ohio! You make a house? Well, yeah.
But you understand why they do that in an apartment, so that, you know, they can service it without having to get inside?
Well, they still had to come in. When my pipe burst, they came in. It'd been nice if they would have just been able to do that, but yeah. So, see, tonight it's supposed to go to 5, and then tomorrow night it'll be 17. We're supposed to get more snow, too. And Friday night it's supposed to be 6, Saturday 9, and then Sunday, all day, it looks like it's going to be above freezing. Once it gets above freezing, it'll stay above freezing for at least 24 hours before it goes back down to freezing on Monday night. And, but almost every day next week, we're going to be above 32, which is just freaking awesome.
Yeah. I hope
melt
every day
shit.
Next week we're above 60.
Melt the shit.
Oh.
I want my house to be finished. Melt the shit. Actually, I'm betting they probably have some more done. I'm also betting they're probably going a little bit slower on purpose now because they're trying to wait for the windows to get in. But they'll probably have, I'm hoping they have the sheeting on the roof and stuff. Maybe even the roof started, but we'll see. They were actually working Sunday not on my house, but on somebody else's. And tonight we cheated, ordered out.
I did that yesterday. Yesterday was when the pipe burst and, you know, the 14-hour shift. So I didn't have time to cook for myself. I ended up eating about 1,000 calories worth of pizza.
And Monday, since Lee
got called
off. How many
thousands of calories?
It was between 3,000 and 3,600 calories worth of pizza.
Whoa.
In your air fryer?
No.
No. From the oven.
Oh.
My son's league got canceled Monday because of the snow. And so since my bachelor night got ruined, I'd already bought the bread and stuff. I made a snowstorm breakfast/dinner. French toast. Because they had the bread and milk.
Well, I have French toast quite often.
It's one of those things I don't really have a recipe for. I just kind of eyeball it.
So you use egg whites, about a cup's worth, and then you use a teaspoon of cinnamon and a tablespoon of vanilla extract and 4 slices of bread.
Yeah, I don't even know. I do eggs, milk, a little bit of vanilla. That's generally about it. If I want time to do cinnamon, sometimes I'll do some cinnamon.
You have to do
but
cinnamon
with French toast. I like to do it on top, though, like maybe after I dip it in the egg, just sprinkle a little bit on each side.
And then sometimes you get some powdered peanut butter and you mix it up a little bit thin and you pour that on top like a syrup next to your sugar-free maple syrup. And woo!
Sugar-free. Good stuff. Yeah, I don't have... I do have some sugar-free whipped cream. I do have sugar-free syrup, but I actually have a big old bottle of real, honest-to-God maple syrup.
Comes out to
not
about
fake shit.
Four. If you do the peanut butter and the whipped cream and the sugar-free maple, it comes out to about with the peanut, the powdered peanut butter is actually extremely low calorie.
Right.
It comes out to about 420, 425 calories.
Okay.
If you have the 45 calorie bread.
And I used real French bread when I made it to make French toast. I had a loaf I bought at the store.
Yeah, see, that's a lot of calories right there, just in the bread.
I don't care. It tasted good. But yeah, you didn't give me an idea. I do have some of the peanut butter. I just bought a can of it over at Sam's the other day. PB Fit, I think it was.
Yeah, PB Fit's good. The Walmart brand, I have to add some sweetener to when I mix it together.
You want
to
try something delicious with that? I guess you could do it with the low-cal, Halo Top or something like that, but take some of that powdered peanut butter and throw it on some ice cream.
Oh, that is good. It is real good.
It's very good.
I do that with my protein ice cream. But another thing that you can do, it's kind of like a homemade Reese's, but you take the powdered peanut butter and you mix together about two servings worth of it, which I think comes out to a quarter cup, half cup after it's all mixed together. And then you take some baking chocolate and you put it on top in a microwave safe container, and then you go microwave it for about 45 seconds or to
hopefully
a minute.
Hopefully you throw some stevia in that, but
it depends on the peanut butter powder you're using. If you're using one that requires a little bit more sweetness, then yeah, you put some sweetener in it. If it's the PB Fits, the one with cocoa in it, that one doesn't really need any sweetener. But then you put that in the microwave for like a minute, and then you spread that chocolate on top around a little bit since it'll be all nice and melted.
Yep.
And then it'll also help harden the peanut butter a little bit because it'll get some of the moisture back out. And then you put it in the freezer for about 15 minutes to let it cool. That is good.
One thing I haven't tried yet with the powdered peanut butter is one of my favorite sundaes from Friendly's. Pat knows what I'm talking about. The Reese's Pieces sundae. And that sundae comes with a lovely peanut butter sauce on it. So I imagine you can take some of that, mix it with some water maybe, and a little bit of sweetener, and basically get a pretty good approximation of that peanut butter sauce. My dad liked that sundae so much that one time he went in there, he said, "Can I buy some of that peanut butter stuff?" He's like, and they're like, "Yeah, sure. It's this much." And he's like, "Okay." And we had some at home, and it was awesome. It's because you can't, because a lot of places, like a lot of restaurants, you could buy like a lot of this stuff, but it's one of those things. Was that at Friendly's? You really couldn't get now. Friendly's, it feels like a kind of like a Bob's Big Boy. I think is that nail it, Pat? I think, yeah. If they're around there anymore, I don't even know if they're around. They came from that area.
All right, I'm gonna have to step away for a little while, handle some work stuff. I'll be back on.
I have not seen a Bob's Big Boy in years.
Yep. Well, I think Pennsylvania was what LB's, I think, but it still was Big Boy, I think. But Bob's is mostly out here. There was a Company Man video? Somewhere I saw there was a video that kind of explained why multiple, like you might have an LB's or a Bob's, or I'm trying to remember some of the other names, but like Bob's Big Boy, like the Big Boy brand and the sandwich and all that was kind of like something like random restaurants could license at one point. And that's why there's like Elby's with a bob with the big boy statue and stuff like that. Which in Ohio it's Frisch's Big Boy. So it's one of those odd restaurants that's kind of regionalized. McDonald's kind of was that way for a little bit too. Like in some areas, like when I was growing up, McDonald's is a little bit different from town to town. You know, yeah, it still had a Big Mac, still had the cheeseburgers and stuff. Each town's McDonald's restaurant kind of looked a little bit different here and there. Not as much anymore, but. But like certain McDonald's would have like a McDonald's that was in New Stanton, Pennsylvania, which is the exit that we give to get on the Pennsylvania Turnpike to drive out to York, or when York and or the Philly area, my parents lived down there. That was I usually make a pit stop either at that McDonald's or some restaurant in that area right before the Pennsylvania Turnpike, because once you got on Turnpike, you know, you only had what between Harrisburg and that part of Pennsylvania, in western Pennsylvania, you might have, what, three rest areas, maybe? I don't know. There's, what, Sightling Hill, there was...
you get trapped in the Great Corn Expanse.
Yeah. There ain't a whole lot between western Pennsylvania and Harrisburg.
I don't think it was Company Man. I don't see Bob's Big Boy in any of his videos. But you know what? I remember watching something like that.
Right,
but I don't know where it went.
I might have just did a query on it. Every once in a while, I'll think, "Hey, did Company Man cover this yet?" And I'll go into YouTube and start. There it is. You know, like whatever happened to Circuit City or whatever, or you know, how did so and so get so big? You know, and Company Man covers it. I love his stuff, man. Good videos.
Absolutely.
That one, and there's a guy who did a lot of dead malls. You know, he'll take a camera and he'll play like 80s mall music as he walks the dead mall. And the mall down the street from my apartment, it's pretty much dead too. Well, I go to the fucking mall when you just go to Amazon.
We gotta start the show. All right, here we go. 5-4 with 894, I believe.
Who's the best show here? Rec Show.
Yeah, 894.